Welcome.
Sorry, someone twiddled my pen.
Cool. Welcome back to the second part of the Under the Abbey Stand season review. Looking at Cambridge United season, of course, last time we looked at how they got on, losing managers and players, and now we're going to look at something a bit more gritty. We're going to go into the AGM with our resident accountant, Matt Ramsey.
It was a feisty evening, to say the least. I've been, I think, every year since probably 2009 or 2010, and obviously it hasn't always been pretty pictures financially at Cambridge United, and even allowing for that, it was the directors who were put up to face the shareholders had a pretty tough evening, really.
How many people were there?
It was difficult. I'd say maybe 50 or so, which I guess is quite normal. They put it up in the Dublin suite on a Monday evening. It was slightly earlier than usual, which raised some suspicions that they were just trying to get it over and done with.
The cynic in me would say that the fact there was planned that kind of, was it 6 o'clock on a Monday?
It was 6 o'clock, and they said that there was an event coming in afterwards, but actually they did face all the questions that they were to face, I think, by the point that people were getting tired and asking about floodlight bulbs just for the sake of keeping the evening going. It was 3 hours in at that point, so wow. even if it had started at the normal time, I think at that point we'd have just wanted to go to bed, frankly. So the fact that it started at 6 o'clock was a blessing, given how long it went on and how many questions there were for people.
So where did they start? What's the summary? What do people need to know?
Well, the club made losses in the year to the end of June, and I still think after the meeting came to an end, people were still slightly at a loss to explain how it happened, which is obviously concerning because the fanfare was made this time last year when the shareholders meeting was on, saying we're on course to break even, potentially make a small surplus, which for a League Two club is a really impressive achievement.
For a football club at all.
Or any football club. Yeah. But having said that, and having been confident of it happening, and bearing in mind that was at the shareholders meeting, which was, I think, March last year, so it was already 9 months into the financial year, we'd compare that to the actual result is not a similar picture. And I still don't think that they've adequately said necessarily actually how it happened. And the key headline, really, especially given the statement that Paul Barron made last night, is that it's really just as well that a fan like him is in a position and being willing as well as able to put money into the club, because he did it for many years until maybe 5 years or so ago, and he's obviously back in the fray now. And the club would potentially be in a sticky situation if it wasn't for the fact that he's already put in a big investment in the last couple of months and has made it fairly clear that he will do moving forward as well.
So just to make it clear, how much money did we lose?
So the loss before interest, tax, depreciation and amortisation in the year was £580,000, which is not good, and it's dug into the money that was made, and that's one thing that people had been really worried about. The question that you see on Twitter the whole time, what's happened to the Man United money? And the key answer is it's gone, pretty much, and it's just gone. A third of it was put aside. It was denied at the shareholders meeting. They went for a different tact, which was weird, because it just isn't true. They'd always said a third of it was going towards having development when the time comes. I've got that in my notes from the shareholders meeting after the Man United Cup game. This is all the Man United money we're talking about. And whatever money that was, substantial amount of money, it's just gone, and it's because the club's made losses in the last 2 years. So the quote that came out was that with operating losses in 15-16 and then 16-17, those two financial years, the money has just been consumed. So it's been used almost as a substitute for Paul Barry, in a sense that the losses that the club's made has just eaten it, really. So thankfully some of it was spent on productive things like the commercial facilities that are there. Obviously the Premier Travel Suite next to the Dublin Suite, they're quite good facilities now. I've got to do there myself this weekend because they're quite good.
So congratulations, by the way, on your engagement.
Thank you.
Yeah,
wasn't plugging for that, but but so they've spent some money on that, but they just said that they had never committed to that third being for that reason. And obviously the ground is always a question that's somewhat up in the air. And the Man United money is something that's definitely been up in the air in the last couple of months when rumours had been around about, you know, what the losses might be. And it goes without saying that people were quite concerned to have that told to them.
So this might sound like a very obvious question, but is our playing budget massively affected now?
They've made it clear that there's not going to be big changes to the playing budget, but the performance has been poor sort of across different areas. So it's not just because, if we go back to what we were talking about, the number of 0-0 draws wasn't the only thing. So Paul Barry's statement that he had read out at the CFU AGM, which was on Tuesday night this week, he's making cuts of £500,000. He's looking for about £500,000 to the budget this year. And obviously Cambridge United as a company is not a huge company, so that's pretty substantial savings. And there's been talk of the playing budget being smaller, or the playing squad, the number in the squad being smaller, and that suggests that there'll be cuts to it. But I think that some of the talk, some people obviously go out, hear these things and just say, oh, we're going to get relegated next season, we're going to be in big trouble. I don't buy into that. I don't think, you know, if it's going to be smaller, it's not like it's going to be slashed. But obviously it doesn't help. And the fact that there are things other than just the football, the fact that they're underperforming, potentially having a direct knock on to how much you can spend on playing budget and stuff like that, and that can influence your chances of how well you can do in the league.
I mean, it's just a bit, I just do find it worrying how that much money just goes out the window. I understand what you're saying. It's the fact is that we've lost five hundred eighty.
Yeah. You're right. It's across various different areas as well. There's the commercial contribution wasn't very good. There was a huge loss on a catering contract, which...
This is something that I take a real issue with, because from my limited experience of catering, which is basically just a kind of...
Going to year KFC.
Which is basically just like bake sales and trade fairs and whatever, running a very small stand. It is not hard to flip a burger, put in a bun and sell it for like £3 and make quite a substantial profit on that. How are we making a £100,000 shortfall on catering?
And the thing is, I'm
baffled. The tactics of it and the football and that sort of thing, that's different. That's to be debated. But this stuff is just complete incompetence.
I must have spent £50 this season on burgers at Cambridge United, and I think I've been to the Abbey like 6 times. So I should be a shareholder in the club. How are we at this point where we've lost £100,000? I echo that completely. What's happened?
I think that one was an outsourcing thing. They've had various things where things have been in-house. They've tried to get people in, and whether there was a bad debt, I'm not sure. Actually, I don't know if that was fully explained. But also the fact that I know that the prices went up, which is why you spent £50 on 6 burgers, probably. Yeah. So I know that it was a bit of outrage, and I think some prices got lowered again. So, but whether the amount actually sold directly, the number of burgers or Coke bottles being bought, I don't know if that actually impacts the club and how much money they make, or whether there is a set amount. But clearly something's gone wrong there, and that's £100,000. But as we say, it's many different things. It's buying people like Halliday and Ikpeazu, or spending money on their wages to make up for the fact that there was such a poor start to the season. It's the soccer schools just not... It basically broke even when there was a big budgeted profit and stuff like that, and it just never happened. There's stuff all over the place that just hasn't been managed properly. And the thing that really comes as a concern is it goes back to the point that they didn't see it coming. Mm. And you can, if you go back a couple of years and you're losing six-figure sums every year, if they lose it this year, no one's going to be surprised. If they lose it next year, no one will be that surprised, even if they're trying to publicly say they're breaking towards break even again. But 9 months into the last year, they were saying this is what it's going to be. And there is one key thing that you can sort of say in their defence is at that point it wasn't the summer, so the tickets had the income hadn't started coming in from the soccer schools, so they thought this is what we're going to get in. But that doesn't cover £580,000 in the losses. And Dave Doggett broke his silence at the AGM, and he was sort of informed on what the latest was, and 6 weeks before the end of the year he thought that the club was going to lose £150,000 6 weeks before it became £580,000, which is such a huge variance. Mm. And they clearly hadn't got to the bottom of it by Christmas, because when David stepped down, Sean Grady went on the radio, local BBC, with Graham Daniels, and Sean was talking about he didn't recognise the loss figures, and obviously the loss figures still came in. Dave Doggett said at the AGM that actually if he'd have been on the radio, if he was still the chairman, he would have said the same thing. So it's not like you're just piling it, the blame all on one person. That was what the thought was even around that time. And obviously those losses, there needs to be a real, hopefully there is a root and branch look into that. And Paul Barry, he's a very successful businessman, so I think that he's really going to be looking into that kind of thing moving forward. And publicly it's been made official that there'll be losses again this year, but with a much more manageable budget, but with a look to breaking even the year after that. And obviously, hopefully now, that will actually come to fruition rather than just being another goal that hasn't happened.
I think that was perhaps the most worrying thing out of the whole sort of shareholders meeting was in it, within that statement that Dave Doggett made, that I think it was just before Christmas when he had pushed for an independent audit of the figures, having had those sort of concerns about how can it go from being £150,000 loss 6 weeks before the end of the financial year to them being so big. And he tried to look further into that, and that wasn't supported. And the first thing that worries me there is that how can the chairman not have access to that sort of information anyway? That surely, I mean, maybe I'm missing something, but it strikes me as mental that the chairman can't get that if he wants it. But also that why would people oppose it within the board? That Why wouldn't you want to know where you're going wrong? And I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist or anything like that, because we've said on the show plenty of times that we don't want to delve into the kind of rumours and stuff, because it doesn't help anyone. You know, we don't want to speculate on where money may or may not have gone, but it does seem slightly odd to me that there's people within the board that voted against having an independent audit of figures when they were so worrying.
Does it also raise the question about not getting money for people like Uche? Does that make that, you know, more of a sticking point as well? Because obviously, in his
Luke Berry money,
yeah, exactly.
Like, is that something that we should be more
about? Well, the Luke Berry money and the Will Norris money is in the current financial year,
so they came in after that loss.
Okay. One thing that is that they're predicting a loss this year, and that's after the Norris money and the Berry money. So if you take those transfers out, the losses in real terms would be quite large, which again is potentially quite concerning. But that's not 580,000 loss after those ones are taken into account. I don't think necessarily the transfer of players is relevant particularly, because if you're a business, obviously players could be the biggest assets you have apart from a football ground, and obviously Cambridge United doesn't own their football ground. So a player who becomes a potential big name, goes on and plays in the Premier League, is a saleable asset. But you can't ever rely on the fact that a Premier League team is ever going to want to come and buy your players. You shouldn't be losing £500,000 a year in the hope that you're going to sell a player that does really well.
Sure.
And even if you do, that's not going to happen every year. And you've got to be, the whole sustainability is such a buzzword in football because it never happens. And you can't be, you can't just be losing that money. You need to be as close to break even as possible. And That's what Paul Barry's been saying moving forward. That's what the goal is.
I think that was really refreshing, actually, in Paul Barry's statement that he made. We put it on our Twitter account for anyone who hasn't seen it yet. But I think basically the main point that he was making is that we're a football club. We're exactly that. And what we tried to do after the Man United money came in, that kind of significant windfall that we got, is that we kind of tried to run before we could walk. And, you know, we tried to develop a massive business when really we're just a League Two football club. And the focus for me should be, okay, we need to kind of ensure that we're not going bust. But past that, we just need to have a successful team on a Saturday afternoon. And we'd move past kind of that into having corporate facilities and all the rest of it and this sort of stuff. And I think basically what Paul Barry said is that it's okay to do that, but live within your means, basically. And that's good. And hopefully, you know, we'll go forward with that. And, you know, I mean, if that, those are the sort of figures that we've seen, just can't be repeated, can they? I mean, they're
worrying. Yeah, it's nice that we've seen a bit of honesty from the people with the power. Whether it is complete honesty, we never know, really. But he said it like, you know, he's called a spade.
He's laid the gauntlet down because he's written his statement. At the very end of it is, he says, the above is all talk. Next year, it's time to deliver. He'll get judged on whether that happens. And as I said earlier, the club is in such a lucky position that he's put in a substantial six-figure sum in the last couple of months and seemingly will be doing so again, at least for this year's losses.
Mm-hmm.
He is a genuine fan of Cambridge United, and he's also a very successful businessman, which is a good combination to have.
It's one of the best, actually. Normally it's an unsuccessful businessman. But
and someone who has no interest in the football club at all.
Yeah.
But the football spend was quite big, so even if we took £500,000 off it, our budget would still quite likely be bigger than Accrington's and Wickham's, who finished both in the top three. And perhaps even if you combine them, because they're two of the teams with the lowest budget in the league. So basically, don't forget the figures and stuff, but don't let that allow you to sort of accept to be mediocre next season. If we're sat in mid-table next season, we have a right to be upset about it. Because I think as fans of Cambridge United who have been told that we're going to start pushing on, we deserve to be pushing on. And seeing a team which, you know, Joe Dunn started to form, which we've spoken about, kind of grow into one that can challenge at the top end of the league. And just because we have lost so much money doesn't mean we don't have a right to be upset with not seeing that. And I've seen plenty of people saying, oh, well, we don't have the money to bring in good players and stuff like this. You do. You just have to be a bit clever about it. Giovanni Brown, he cost us nothing. His wages won't be anywhere near the top earner, I wouldn't have thought. There's players out there. You don't have to spend significant sums of money on players to ensure that sort of quality. So, you know, just saying that, you know, the playing budget, while it might be reduced, is still going to be competitive enough to expect some sort of challenge.
It sounds disrespectful to say if Accrington can do it, but actually it's probably the highest compliment you can pay them. That I think that their budget, if it was the fourth lowest in League Two, I'd be surprised. You know, people always say it's like a relegation budget kind of thing. Wickham, obviously slightly more established football league club, but they're hardly as big as some of the teams that they finished above. Good role models to have, because it means that any team in the league should be looking at doing what that is. And we've talked about playing style and developing players that we have. And Graham Daniels spoke at the shareholders meeting about bringing young players through as being a big thing. Why can't United be that team that does that? I don't think people will be looking to make excuses saying, oh, we haven't got enough to buy this proven goal scorer, because I hope they don't, because it will be sort of making excuses, really.
Sorry, not sort of within the club. I mean sort of among the fan base. I just feel like that's kind of where these sort of things start, if that makes sense. That if the fans are accepting it, then why shouldn't the club be unhappy with it, sort of thing. And if basically, I think the fans need to, you know, keep that kind of pressure up in many ways. It's just a point that kind of grates on me that just wanted to kind of get out there, really.
Just going back to the AGM stuff really, really quickly. The one thing I was wondering about was a couple of years ago, correct me if I'm wrong, I remember someone, it might have been Jez, saying that we weren't relying on money coming through the gates anymore.
I think they reduced it to about a quarter of.
Right. Yeah. So they were less reliant on it on money that was on paying customers.
It was in the 20%. I think it was mid 20. So about a quarter is right of the club's turnover that came from gate receipts, and that's why there was a bit of a disgruntlement when they took the early bird season ticket prices away a couple of years ago. They got rid of concession prices in the middle of the main stand, which they now brought back, which possibly is quite telling about the sort of the need to really get people in.
Well, this is what I was going to ask. Has that changed?
I think if you read between the lines of what Matt's just said, they've brought back the concessions, they've brought back the early bird discount, they've now extended the early bird discount deadline to the end of this week. It basically is an admission from the club that, yes, we do matter, and they should never have made out that we didn't.
Hopefully basically. It's a step towards being connected with people, because I'm not sure necessarily that I buy into it, but I know that some people feel that it's become such a corporate kind of culture, and the people who were there at Macclesfield on a Tuesday night in the conference years have sort of, you know, don't kind of feel as much into it anymore, when that's the kind of apathy that you get maybe from the results being poor. And I think that doing things like that, it's even if it's an admission that it was wrong, it's still the right thing to be doing.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, yeah, well, yeah, exactly that. I couldn't agree more with that, to be honest.
I see where these people are coming from. But then a lot, like you say, apathy from bad results is one thing. The other thing is we're not a non-league club anymore. Do you know what I mean? There's a big difference.
No, I mean,
well.
It's absolutely reasonable to run, let's just say, for example, a ticket office with paid employees or a social media account or the public relations stuff with someone who's paid to do that job. Most clubs in the Football League have someone to do that. Ridiculous for a club of our level to pay someone to edit the programme, to run the social media accounts, to write on the website, to edit the website, that sort of stuff. Like, and then, just because it's not the same volunteers doing it doesn't mean that it's not right. But I can see where people maybe find that a bit grating because it's not what they know and that sort of thing. And I mean, I do always find it funny, people hark up and back to the conference days, weren't they good? And they weren't. Like, I mean, it's okay looking back on them now because we're in the Football League, but if we were still in there, I think we would be looking at that kind of very differently,
I agree.
Right, good stuff. That's the AGM covered in our season's finale of Under the Abbey Stand. But we've still got a few things to look at. We've got questions coming from you guys. We're going to look at what League Two is shaping up to look like next season, of course, as well. So on that point, boys, we know who's come down from League One. We're going to face trips to Oldham, Northampton, MK Dons and Bury next season. And we already know that Macclesfield have come up from the National League. So if anyone was missing those trips to Macclesfield, you've got them back. And we're either going to have Tranmere or Boreham Wood as the other side to play. Of course, Tranmere with Football League experience and Boreham Wood, less so. So, boys, what do we think about the way League 2 is shaping up next season?
I really hope it isn't Boreham Wood.
Massively so.
We played them in an FA Trophy game. I think it was the first round. Ryan Charles scored, which tells you about the quality of football. And the police moved it to a 1 o'clock kickoff because they thought there might be trouble because people of other fans might turn up. And we won 1-0 in front of about 400 people. The ground has probably been done up a bit. And they do have Tom Champion in their team, which does give them a big plus in their book. But, I don't...
It's the only plus in their book.
And the fact it's closer than Tranmere. That's probably the only other thing. But fair play to Tom Champion. And also, is it Kieran Murta plays for them?
Kieran Murta does play for them, yeah. I was surprised when I saw that. I watched them a little bit of their playoff semi-final. I mean, we spoke a little bit about how they've been doing them in non-league recently. I mean, the standard of it has gone massively downhill. I mean, I don't know if I'm remembering it differently, but just the defending in it is terrible. Kieran Murta, we had him, Jez's first year maybe?
I think
in charge?
It was that kind of era, and he didn't play many games. He played more games for his country than he did for Cambridge United.
Antigua and Barbuda International, wasn't he? Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of League Two, I mean, we've said it for it seems like we say it every single season, but I think it looks like a weaker league next season. In some ways, in that we've lost big spenders in Luton, Accrington just always achieve. But then you look at maybe the teams that might stay down, and
we're going to have Exeter, Notts County, Coventry, Lincoln. Three out of four of them are going to still be in the league next season.
I would also expect teams like Port Vale and perhaps Grimsby and Stevenage, if they get some money in from young player sales and stuff, to challenge
Carlisle,
Colchester, and Carlisle.
They've got rid of Keith Curl at the end of the season. Could be the rejuvenation they need.
I mean, it's going to be an interesting league next season. I don't think there's any. I don't think there's a standout team going into it. I think it's going to be quite even. But again, we do seem to say this every single season. We've lost all the big clubs, and therefore, we will challenge by default.
A very quick note on MK Dons as well. Surely something's got to be said about this. AFC Wimbledon reformed in 2002, playing on a park somewhere, finally overtaken MK, which is great. At least there's one good day out there.
And they were very gracious, were Wimbledon, about it on Twitter.
I absolutely love this. My favourite AFC Wimbledon MK Dons story is that they played each other in a youth game on like Saturday morning or something. The pitch was waterlogged, got postponed. They didn't tell the MK Dons players until they got there. And we're literally talking about children here. I quite like the pettiness. I mean, it's deserved, but I think we can start to put that behind us now. I mean, I get that the hatred's always going to kind of be there for MK Dons, but it's back to status. I mean, I think other than dropping the Dons bit from their name, which I don't see why any MK Dons fan would want it anyway.
No.
I don't think there's a lot more that can happen now to kind of get past that. I mean, it's a project that they tried and it's failed, basically. So, was it in the wider interest of football? I'd probably say no. The MK Dons project, not keeping Wimbledon going.
I thought you were throwing shade.
No.
Shaping up to be a good away day next season.
Yeah, and Northampton as well.
Good to see them. Always, it was a close one. Always fill that one out. We could take whatever number we want to Milton Keynes because it's such a massive ground in League Two to be there.
And it's only an hour away.
It's close, and
get the X5.
Half of Cambridge United fans went there to watch Cambridge City play MK Dons in the FA Cup, but for a lot of people that'll be a new ground as well, and there aren't too many new grounds in the division.
Good to see Oldham get relegated as well. They've been in League One for about 20 years. what a boring existent that must be.
That isn't even an exaggeration. I think it's 18 seasons.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit like Coventry, actually. I think this is the first season since about 1990 or something. They're finishing the top six of a league.
Amazing. I love that. Good to see Oldham get relegated.
Yeah, I think League Two shaping up to be very northern.
Yeah, do we think Tranmere probably have got too much for Boreham Wood?
I'd be very surprised if Tranmere didn't win it just because they had that experience last season as well. Although, as we know, losing a playoff final 1 year doesn't mean you'll win it the next.
But Tranmere have great big game experience. I know they lost last year, but they've also got the Football League experience. So if they were to come into League Two, a trip to Prenton Park could be a very difficult one for Cambridge United next season.
And no Michael Nelson to score 89th minute equalisers like the one time we were together in the Football League before they went down.
Down to 10. Last minute. Away Friday night for some reason. in Birkenhead. Delightful.
Oh, yeah, the Wirral. It's a cold part of the world. And Cambridge, I've got a lot of northern trips next year. So we're going to move on to some of the questions posted by you guys. Thanks for all of the questions from the first episode until now. We've had a rocky road as Cambridge United fans, but we've got there eventually. Of course, we finished 12th. What are the questions looking like today, Tom?
Yeah, so again, had a number sent in to us. The first one came from Patrick Bartram. We did touch on it a little bit, but we didn't really discuss it in great detail. And it's, do you think Joe Dunn could play a huge part in us potentially keeping players this summer, as they seem to have come on so much under his management?
I think we did kind of touch on that in the first part. I think it's a huge point. But then again, if a player like George Maris gets an offer from a bigger club, whoever being in charge is going to really keep him here at the end of the day.
I think the club who comes in for him and the level that they play at will probably be the deciding factor. Yeah. So, sure. I mean, obviously we don't know. It might be that all the rumours around people like Maris are completely rubbish, but equally it wouldn't be surprising if they're true. And if it's a big championship team comes in, then no one's going to blame Maris for wanting to take that one up as much as we'd all like to see him stay.
We should just say as well, George Maris during the week linked with a move to Sheffield United, Barnsley, where obviously he was released from, and Burton Albion. So
he's also from Sheffield. So I mean, you know, Joe Dunn would have a proper job on his hands trying to keep him here if they were to come in for him, if that rumour were to materialise.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think basically we think no, because if a big club came in, we probably wouldn't have the power. I mean, we're a club that does not stand in players' ways anyway. Mm. But I think what Patrick basically is asking is that he's more likely to stay here now than what he would have been.
I think totally.
6 months ago.
And I think Joe Dunn's definitely going to get the potential out of players coming in, and he's also improved players who've maybe been in the club. And you know, Amu especially seems to have come on leaps and bounds under the Joe Dunn era. So I think he's certainly a good manager. But as you say, if the right club comes in for a player, then the curtains could be drawn. But it's an interesting one, and we'll see throughout the summer if he manages to keep any of the big players.
Yeah, and another one which is slightly related, which came in from Staz on Twitter, who asked us, which player would be the biggest loss to Cambridge United this summer if they were to leave? I think there's a number of options, really.
I think it's exactly who we were just talking about.
Yeah.
I'll add Halliday in, because we haven't spoken about him, and he's the other one who's going to be linked to teams, you'd assume, because he's still under contract, as with Maris, but Maris and Brown are the sort of attacking ones, the ones that are the obvious flair players that can score goals. Well, obviously Halliday showed that he could score goals on Saturday as well. But I think that it might be as difficult to replace someone like him. It might mean that they just throw Leon Davis in, but obviously never really sure. He might fly and be the next big thing himself, but it might be potentially a risk or just hard to get another replacement in. And if he does go, then you certainly wouldn't expect to see a right back as good as Halliday is coming in to replace him.
Another one who's possibly a bit easier replaced, but just one player of the year, I think Greg Taylor would be a big miss, just full stop. Good centre-backs are hard to come by, especially versatile centre-backs. I think that would be a big miss if he were to go. Not that he won't.
The benefit of that being he has just signed a new contract. So
it's true, but what are contracts anymore?
But if he goes, then at least you'd say it must be a good deal. You'd hope.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah, I think signing a contract now is almost like a retainer, so you're going to guarantee yourself some money. You want to give a good player a contract, so you get something at the end of it. But of course, Greg Taylor is loyal. He loves the area. We found out that when he came into the studio. He loves being centralised around this area. And I think, we've done well.
You're just plugging our show, are you?
Yeah, just plugging our show again, you know, if you want to listen back to that.
What about Uche? How much of a loss is he going to be?
Signing strikers is probably the most difficult thing to predict because we always have the best form of signing experienced, proven goal scorers and then turning them to people who are completely incapable of scoring in a United shirt. So,
and then passing it on to someone who will then get the best out of them.
Absolutely. So strikers, at least one, probably a couple of strikers are going to have to come in. We don't know if Adi Aziz has a future. He might come back in for all we know as well. I'd be surprised. But, yeah, we need goals because the only person up front who's got goals to his name this season is Ibiere, who has signed on for another year. But he's a bit of a... And Barry Corr, of course. But with both of those... They're both Barry Corr types in the fact that you're never sure how many games they're going to be able to play in a season. So it's really important that they get strikers and preferably ones who actually can score goals.
Yeah, so on a related note as well, we had a question from Harry Bray and he asked us sort of a suggestion for a realistic signing you'd like to see Cambridge make during the summer. Have we got any?
To play alongside Greg Taylor now, Leon Legg's going, I think Fraser Franks is one that I'd like to see. He's got experience, Conference and League Two level, been at Stevenage most recently. And I know that Stevenage haven't ended particularly well, but he's just left, and I think he would be a good fit. And obviously, a centre back is one of those areas that we certainly need to be looking at. John Akindi, I think, is not very likely because there's going to be a transfer fee involved for him. But Barnett have just got relegated, and he scores goals. He is a proven one, so it would be up to us to make him not score goals now.
I love John Akindi. I think he's great. Someone a name that's been floating around is Macaulay Bonn.
Macaulay Bonn is at Orient. There's him, and there's another one at Orient as well who's been doing well. Macaulay Bonn, I think, is local as well, originally around here, and was in the youth team at Colchester with Joe Dunn. So there's actually some logic behind that as well, and he's had a good season for them.
Someone also asked a question about Jack Barham, who's at Greenwich Borough.
That was Patrick Bartram. They sound similar, but they're not related, I don't think.
I don't know if you've looked into this. He's scored,
He scored 37 goals for Greenwich Borough, which they play at the same step of non-league as St Neots do, which is obviously where Giovanni Brown came from. So Patrick, obviously, has put him forward as a potential option.
Well, I mean, we were talking about not missing out on these non-league stars. That seems like a potential one. He's also, I read an article, he'd had a trial with us and Millwall over this season, but he'd committed his future till the summer with Greenwich. So I don't know. That would be one.
I think one just to kind of carry on the theme of sort of Colchester, people that have worked with Joe Dunn before. Anthony Wordsworth got released from Southend. He's played at a higher level, played with Ipswich, obviously Colchester and Southend. Centre mid, we might need to strengthen in that area. Might possibly be a good option, maybe. But again, it's kind of difficult to say with that sort of thing because you're never really sure who's available. Even if they've been released from clubs, I think players tend to have things lined up well in advance of things being announced these days. Moving on then, we had Ryan Johnson, friend of the pod. He asked us, there's been kind of a trend on social media recently to kind of grade seasons. So if you had to, obviously we're in the season review, so if you had to grade this season, so like an A, B, C, D, etc., what would you give it and why?
From my point of view, I do a radio show every Saturday reporting on Cambridge United's woes, basically, and trying to sum that up. And I watch them, you know, any midweek games I can get to or any close away games. From my point of view, it's got to be like a C-, you know. It's that lazy kid at school who's definitely pushing an A, maybe a B+, but they're just coasting. They're not doing enough, you know. It's the bare minimum. They've done enough. They've got halfway. They're not in the top of the class. They're not in the bottom of the class. They've just coasted through. And a C- is all they deserve. There's been great points. They've got, you know, an A-star in their French oral, but then, you know, they've got an F in their cooking class. So it's just been disappointing. It's been up and down.
Spent all their money on booze and yeah, right.
Exactly. It's, you know, smoking fags outside the bike sheds as well as scoring the winner in the cup final. You know, that kind of thing.
I'm not going to use weird analogies, but it's going to be it's a sea of some kind, isn't it? Yeah. Because if you've got to spit it, it's how it is. It's sort of like, let's go with a school analogy. You've got thirds of the season, you've got three terms. The first two terms were rubbish and the last one was really good. And but so hopefully you might look back more fondly on this season if next season does really well kicking on from it. But yeah, overall, look at where the team was this time last year. Hadn't been that far away from the playoffs, or took the chances down to the last day of the season, and clearly haven't pushed on. So yeah, a solid average C, I think.
Average Joe.
I'd agree with that as well. So that brings to an end the correspondence that we've had from the sort of social media channels. Again, thanks very much for everything that you've sent in this season. We'll try and do something over summer, and obviously going into next season, we'd love to hear from people sort of going into that. Just for people who aren't aware of how to get in touch with us, it's at AbbeyStandPod on Twitter and Instagram, and AbbeyStandPod@gmail.com.
So obviously we've had trials, tribulations and some pitfalls with football Jenga this season under the Abbeystand. It's probably been the blot on our report card as far as it goes, but we're going to try it one more time on this season review. So we've got an aficionado of Cambridge United here with Matt Ramsey, and we've got two guys who are sometimes coherent at games. I've gone for a Cambridge United game. It was at the Abbey Stadium. It was a good point in the season. Cambridge United 1, Luton 1. So without this being a hard one, it might be hard from the other way, because the thought behind it is you might actually get quite a few answers in this before you're stumped. But someone will drop one and you'll get one wrong first time. But it was Cambridge United 1, Luton Town 1 at the Abbey Stadium this season. And of course the guest starts first. Matt Ramsey gets underway.
Are we talking about people who came off the bench as well?
They of course. Okay. So all the players who started, all the players who came off the bench.
I'll go for the goal scorer off the bench, Jabbo Ibeire.
Correct.
The best tackle I've ever seen, Gary Deegan.
Correct. And the person that tackle was on, Luke Berry.
Correct.
We'll go for... Who should we go for? Taylor.
Correct.
I'll go for David Ford.
Correct.
I'll go for Jake Jervis.
Correct.
Brad Halliday.
Yep.
Hilton.
Yes, of course.
George Taft.
He played.
Sent off Collins.
That's right.
And score.
Of course he did. Harrison Dunk.
Yep.
I thought you might have dropped it there. George Maris.
Came off the bench.
Billy Waters.
Yep.
I might have dropped this here. Uche.
Uche Piezu started.
Ollie Lee.
Ollie Lee, yeah.
Brad, is it Brad? No, it's not Brad, but it's Potts. Someone Potts.
Yep, I'll give you that, yeah.
Stetch.
Yeah. Oh, we're getting gritty now.
Scott Cuthbert. Oh,
no. Yeah, he came off the bench.
Came off the bench? Oh, I thought it started. Thought I dropped a ball there.
Oh, how long have you got? David Amu.
Yep, came off the bench.
Liam O'Neill.
Yeah, he was started.
Glenn Ray.
Yes. This is tense.
How many have we got here? Can we count?
We must have nearly all five, six.
We only need seven players in the whole game, and you've completed both lineups.
I've got 21.
Can you tell us how many United players we've done?
I've just got to get through one more round, and I've got one.
Right. So it's Matt Ramsey's go, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Tense.
Ooh. Barry Cole.
No. No, God, Barry Cole did not play.
Matt Ramsey's gone.
Giovanni Brown.
He did.
That must be it.
Jack Stacey.
Oh, that's a great shout.
Fuck's sake.
I'm really surprised myself with my knowledge of Luton Town players.
A closet Luton fan.
I might be going mad here. Don't Luton have two players with the surname Lee?
You can't ask him a question.
No, okay. Another Lee. No.
Oh, it's just shakes the head all around. Julian, it was a valiant effort, but they don't.
And Elliot Lee.
Elliot Lee was injured.
Yeah.
He was injured. So I wasn't wrong.
No, you were right, but he didn't
play.
Did.
They both scored in the 7-0.
Elliot Lee scored an absolute worldie, and Ollie Lee scored from another postcode.
So it wasn't a bad wrong, and that's the best football Jenga we've ever had. Probably why we don't use games from Cambridge United's current season on the football Jenga.
Who did we miss?
You
that
missed
Medi
Alito.
I don't think anyone at the game knew he was playing either. So.
And then from Luton, you missed Sheehan, Downs, Daff.
Sheehan, that's what I was thinking of. I was thinking of Sheehan.
And Gambin. So it was a valiant effort from all. Slightly different take on the football Jenga. Listen, thank you to Cambridge 105 Radio across the city in South Cambridge for tuning in to Sunday Sports Week with me and, of course, Julian and Tom and hopefully Matt Ramsay over the summer. Thanks to all of you for tuning in, downloading, sending us your questions. Thanks to all the guests we've had, especially to Matt Ramsay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to Julian Roberts.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks to Tom Walker.
Thank you very much. Been good to get going.
We'll see you through the summer.